Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs in Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my hosts as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season two of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, dude.
The 90s called.
With Christine Taylor and David Lasher.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to our podcast. It's a little podcast called Hey, Dude, the 90s called. And I am one of your co-hosts. I'm Christine.
And I'm David.
Hi, David.
Hi. The podcast is little, but it's getting bigger.
Little because it's just the two of us. And, you know, we've got Lorraine. We've got a few folks in our little inner circle. It is intimate. We've got a really great group, and it's been a lot of fun. And we're almost coming up on a year since we did our first episode. Can you believe that?
We should do something fun for our 1 year.
Our 1 year birthday.
Yeah, let's think of something.
Yes. You and I had done a little sort of teaser for it before Thanksgiving last year.
Then
we did our, hey, dude, you know, we met with everybody and recorded our episode in December last year, which I think it then aired.
You came to LA and we did some work, some photo shoots, some social media. And then and then I went to New York for the Jingle Ball.
Exactly. And then we recorded the
Hey Dude.
Yes. I was laughing. Something popped into my head thinking about that, because that was we did this photo shoot, and then we had to look at all the pictures and make decisions. And I just remember, because, you know, I'm a crazy person about that. I had to look at we were supposed to pick our top 10 of the two of us together. That's what's hard, guys. We collectively, David and I, had to pick our two favorites of the shots of us together. And of course, we both are looking at ourselves in the picture.
Well, I luckily looked at all of them and said, I like all of them.
In fact, this is exactly what happened, is you texted me and said, can you deal with this with Jill? And Jill is the one that, Jill and I chose the best photos of you and me collectively. That's what we do as moms, as wives.
Oh, believe me. When we take any picture, it's never the first round. Jill has to look at it. No. We got to do it again. And even when we have a stranger taking the pictures, I'm like, listen, this person's been here for 5 minutes.
Right,
just settle on this.
Oh, I love it. Anyway, we are, we've got a great guest today who is in our waiting room ready to go.
Iconic. Iconic.
Iconic in '90s iconic for sure, but has been around forever and is still
crushing it.
I mean, huge. He's doing so much. Huge followings. He's all over the place. Shall we let in our iconic '90s guest? Pauly Shore.
Pauly Shore, let's do it.
Hi there.
There he is, Pauly Shore.
Yeah, what's up, guys?
Pauly, thank you so much for joining us today, man. This is a real treat, and everyone is so excited on our podcast.
Cool.
Love the California shirt. Are you in California right now?
I'm in Venezuela.
What?
What?
I'm running from the feds.
Okay, let's hear more about that then, please.
Well, your buddies with Hugo Chavez.
If you go into my social media platforms, you can see that they're after me. So it's quite a deterrent from, you know, California, but you know, I'm in the jungle, so I'll be all right. This is a private villa that I'm in right now, so no one really could find me.
So you're just hoping that the feds aren't listening to this podcast then, correct?
Right, because they're coming to Venezuela right now.
You guys are blurring my face. You said that.
Christine, this is not gonna be like our normal interview.
No, this is, the face is gonna be blurred. There's gonna be a voice box. Nobody's gonna know who this is. That's going to be the game.
Pauly, I have to say, you and I have a very close mutual friend, Mike Young, who I have to thank for helping to bring you on here. And I just blew up his phone. I think he thought somebody passed away. But I'm like, I'm interviewing Pauly in like 10 minutes and just give me anything to, you know, what can I say? And he said, tell him I say hi.
I was going to wear who the fuck is Mike Young hat. But, you know what I mean? but my dog ate it, so...
Oh, man. Mike, honestly, Christine, Mike Young is one of my oldest friends. And, you know, we had Patton Oswalt on last week talking about how he didn't love stand up at first, but he loved hanging backstage. He loved the community. He loved the people. And when I was in my 20s, Mike Young, you know, all our friends would pregame and roll up to the Comedy Store, walk straight to the back and say, we're with Mike Young. We'd get free drinks. And that was our hang, you know. But he's one of the sweetest, one of the funniest people I've ever met, but he's one of the kindest, kind-hearted people. Like he's the greatest guy. And I just
let's be honest. He needs a fucking break. So if we can send some money to the Mike Young Foundation.
No, Pauly, his show at the Ned Hotel in New York. I have friends calling me like, dude, can you get me in? Can you get me in?
He asked me to go on the show, but I don't think my material resonates with model influencers from, like, you know, New York. So,
oh, you'd be surprised, man.
Yeah,
these kids love 90s.
Christine, we know each other, right?
We do know each other. I wondered if you knew that we knew each other from an eternity ago.
Yes.
Do you remember,
Jason?
Yes, Jason. But I first met, so I the way I first met you was I auditioned for Biodome with you and Steven. And I think Joey Adams was already cast as your girlfriend, but I was auditioning for Stephen Baldwin's girlfriend in Biodome. Didn't get the job, but auditioned with you both. And then later started to date the director, Jason Blum.
Yeah.
And so I was at all of the premieres for Biodome, and I remember I saw your face all the time, and I heard every line. I feel like I still know every line from Biodome.
Yeah. No, I it's crazy. You just click your heels and then 20, 30 years are here we are. Isn't that wild?
I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
Also, I'll say I watched the trailer for Pauly Shore is Dead. And we'll get to that. But Ben is all over that thing.
I know.
Doing this funny comedy, like playing along with Pauly's whole narrative.
Yeah. And the other crazy thing too is Ben, and I don't know if he auditioned with you, Pauly, or if you were cast at that point, but Ben screen tested for Encino Man for Brendan's part.
Like no
Ben,
way.
Yes. So I don't know if you two read, and we're just the people that, you know, don't get cast in Pauly Shore movies, but that was how I met you. And yeah, Ben really felt like he was going to get Encino Man. He did his best caveman and really felt like he nailed it.
It was probably a blessing in disguise you didn't get cast in it, because everyone that gets cast in my movies, their life goes to shit. So, you know.
Well, Brendan Fraser just won an Oscar, dude. I mean.
No, that's not Brendan. That's just a chubby guy that acts like Brendan.
Oh.
Listen, I want to get into, we try and prepare. We have a rundown that our producer gives us, but there's a way too much. I mean, your stand up, your podcast, but can we go back to growing up in a family that is comedy royalty, and your dad bought the Comedy Store, your mom took it over, and she was sort of like the gatekeeper of comedians. I mean, Mike Young, one thing he told me, he goes, ask Paulie what it was like to have Sam Kinison as his babysitter. So I just want to know, what was it like growing up, you know, in the Comedy Store world?
Well, it's kind of the reason why I'm doing all these kind of autobiographical projects right now. I have a book, I have a one-man show, and I have a docuseries, and I'm about to do something with Adam Sandler on it. So everyone, you know, is saying what exactly you just said, which is like, that must have been crazy. Like, you know, no one, you know, and I hate talking about, the only reason why I'm talking about myself with this shit is because people seem to be interested in it. You know what I mean? Because whenever I do things, I don't think of myself. I think of the audience, and the audience just, my whole life has been, what's it like growing up at the store? What's it like? You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, Sam was a big heart, you know, he was a big heart. He got crazy, and, but he was a genius. There was that window into Sam Kinison where he was, you know, undisputed, you know, the best comic out there. I mean, Robin Williams to Dangerfield to Dice to, I mean, everyone watched Sam because he had this preacher background where he was a preacher, you know what I mean? Where he was, you know, he came from, you know, preaching in the Midwest and in the South. And so he had that kind of cadence of this thing, and he took it to the stage. So you're kind of, it's almost like that old Reese's peanut butter commercial where you kind of mix the chocolate and the peanut butter and you put it together. Like, holy shit, like that's amazing. So you take this preacher who's kind of going against the church, and then you put him into Hollywood as a stand-up, and it was just this combo of like, oh man. So,
but how was he as a babysitter and to a child? I mean, was
he wasn't my babysitter. He was a guy that came out to the store in the mid '80s, and I was 14, 15 years old, and he was doing shows at the store, and I just was, you know, very, at 14, 15, you're very impressionable by your surroundings. So when he came in, I was at that age where I'm like, holy shit. So I just, you know, I glommed on to him, you know, but I glommed on to a lot of people, you know.
Right. Like who stands out in your mind? I just have to ask, like, who influenced you? Because you went into stand up pretty quickly and on the heels of some of the greatest comics in the world.
Yeah. I mean, Robin was to me like, you know, there's no Robin. There'll never be another Robin Williams, you know, right. Because, you know, he would go on stage and he would just start, you know what I mean? And we're talking in front of a big crowd, a small crowd. That was kind of how Robin worked. And he would just,
he was so quick, right?
And then, you know, you got Roseanne Barr, you know, who came out, you know, in the 80s, and she was, you know, she was remarkable. And she had her tight 6 minutes that she did on Carson. And that really kind of made her, you know, develop, like, you know, that's how it was back then. You know, you do your 6 minutes and then, you know, you go on Carson and then the network see it and you get a sitcom. I mean,
right. But to get on Carson, your mom, Mitzi Shore, was kind of a gatekeeper, or am I being wrong in saying that your mom helped decide who went to the next level?
Well, she just, if she found someone that she liked, she would develop them, and she'd give them a job as the doorman, give them a job as the phone person parking the cars. and that's if she liked you. Because what that said was, yo, you got something, but you're not ready for the stage, but we want you in the environment so you can watch the other comedians kind of develop and you know, see how they go. So, I mean, it's a college, you know, the Comedy Store is a college, yeah.
Right. But think of the talent. Her eye for talent has to be unprecedented. The people that she let on her stage who went on to do amazing things is almost unheard of starting in the 70s all the way to, you know, to current, 90s, but
90s, yeah, doesn't, yeah, no, it was, you know, she was there, and she was, you know, there'll never be another Mitzi Shore, and there'll never be another kind of era of comedy at that time, you know, that was the that was the heyday. But it's with music, it's with acting, it's with movies, it's the same thing. There's no, you know what I mean? If you look at the old films and you look at the old musicians, it's the same thing. I mean, Sunset Strip in the you know, 70s, 80s, and 90s was a very special place. It was magical. Yeah. So
magical. Now, let me ask you, as a kid growing up around that, and
more
and
importantly, where's Ben right now?
Ben is, I think he's on another Zoom. He's,
well, get him. I want to see his face.
I'll see if I can get him to come over.
Well, first of all, I love Ben. I haven't been able to spend a lot of time with him, but I adore him and I love him so much. And forget about his talent. His talent is just, he's another level. But as a person, I've always really, you know, I miss him because I haven't seen him. But definitely send him my love, you know.
I really will. He says such wonderful things about you too, yeah. and I think, you know, we've been in New York for a while, but haven't been out in California as much. But I know he would love to see you. Like, really, really has such great memories.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How did you feel having your mom as such a powerhouse and all of these incredible people that you were obviously around? And like David, you were saying, like in the scene and just sort of, you know, it was a comedy college. Did you feel it was an easy transition for you, or did you feel the pressure? Did you feel like, oh, my God, I've got to do good by my mom?
I look back on, you know, the era of Pauly Shore is Dead, you know, at that time. That was in my 30s. And that's when, like, I stopped doing those big studio films. And I think a lot of it, and I look back now on, like, kind of like what happened. And, you know, why didn't my career go like Sandler's or Ben's career, where, you know, I was starring in movies, people know me from movies. And I think a lot of it has to do that, you know, the faster you make it, the harder you fall. And I think for me, you know, I just wanted to work, because part of it is I just love to work. And I still am that same guy, which is why I'm single, which is why I don't have a girlfriend, which is why I'm not in a relationship. I don't know how to balance the two. And I think that a lot of it, and again, I don't want to blame my mom, but I want to point my fingers at a kid that was trying so hard to get not accolades, but to get approval from my mom. Because when I first started doing stand-up, it was like this. She would like go to college. That's what my whole one-man show is about. My one-man show is crazy. It's all about my childhood. And it's all about this tension with me and my mom when I first decided, you know, how I moved out, and I was like, fuck her and blah, blah, blah. And it just got really bad. But I think that to answer your question, it was hard, because here I was trying to make it, but here I was trying to get acceptance from my mom, the queen of comedy. And then once I did, it was like, it was fucking on. You know, meaning me and my mom's relationship all of a sudden, you know, when I was starring in movies, you know, right out of high school, you know, she was, you know, acceptance of me. So the right way to do it would have been to slowly develop your career and then maybe hit it more in 30s. You know what I mean? But I was so like wanting to make it so I could show her that, hey, this is real. I'm not going to college. And so that, I think, has a lot to do with what happened to my movie career, is because I wasn't thinking. I was just wanting to work and wanting to please my mom. Yeah.
Well, and you were young, though, too. And a lot of show business is really striking while the iron's hot. And it's hard to say no to things. It's hard to think through things when it's snowballing the way it did for you. I mean, it happened fast, fast.
Yeah, it happened fast. It was like you're saying, you're right. I mean, I was doing HBO specials. I was starring in movies. I was on MTV. I was doing albums. I was doing all these things at once. And it happened. You're right. It did happen fast. MTV, it was such a, it was like the eye of the storm regarding like the entertainment business. I mean, if you were on MTV in the entertainment business, you were gold. You know?
Yeah, we had Carson Daly on, and he talked all about that. And Daisy Fuentes was on 2 weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, the Totally Pauly Show, I remember that. That was like at the height of MTV.
And it was just so innocent, and it was so loose, and it was so authentic that it just caught on worldwide. It got everywhere. And that's when Disney approached me and we started doing all these movies. And thank God I had that background in acting before MTV, because before MTV, I was doing 21 Jump Street, and I would do Satan Elsewhere, and I would do Married with Children. And I was doing a movie with, I did a TV show. I'm on text message with Leonardo DiCaprio sometimes, because I met him when he was 14 years old on a pilot that I did called Parenthood. So if you remember Parenthood years ago, Keanu Reeves starred in Parenthood, but there was a pilot, Parenthood, where I played the girlfriend's boyfriend. And then Leonardo DiCaprio played my girl's younger brother. So Leo's always been really cool to me. And we still have a relationship. He remembers that. But that's how it was. I was on Drew Barrymore about a month ago, and we were gushing over each other just because we both came from that era and that time. Christine remembers. I mean, she was around during that time, just how Hollywood was so simple and so fun and innocent. And, you know, you'd go on auditions and you'd sit in the waiting room with your sides. They were called sides, you know, and you'd audition. And I would see like David Arquette. And I'd see all these guys like in the waiting room, you know?
That's interesting that you were an actor just pounding the pavement going on auditions. I never knew that, but
yeah. Yeah. Before MTV, I was acting a lot, and I was in acting class and all that stuff. I was very serious, you know. I even drove around LA in my purple Jeep, and my license plate said Paul Bro on it. And I had my commercial headshots, and I would like start handing out my commercial headshots to people. I was so excited. You know, and I never got a commercial, which is the funny thing.
Those were hard
headshots with the four different.
Yeah, the composite.
You had your glasses, your nerdy look.
Yeah, you had like
one was a cool
your
look.
Leather jacket.
Yeah, you had like the soda jerk. You had like the surfer. You had like, you know, the guy working underneath the fucking the engine. You know, with oil on his face. It was so much fun. You know what I mean? It was like this. It was just so much fun.
Yeah. Auditions were fun at one time. Paulie, what I find so interesting, though, is that you grew up around the greatest comedians in the world. And you said, you know what? I want to do that. And I guess, I don't know. I don't know the analogy, but like many people would have been like, I don't got it. I don't have it. But you said, I'm going to go do it. And then you carved your own path and, you know, made an amazing career for yourself.
Yeah, I, you know, comedy, you know, as you know, it's not something that you choose. It chooses you. You know, I have two brothers and I had a sister. She was around and they're not comedians. So, and my dad was a comedian you know, it's something inside of you. You know, here I am 55 years old and next week I'm going to Oklahoma City to do shows and I'm excited. You know what I mean? Because when I'm on that stage in front of all those people, I feel the most comfortable. And that's my therapy. I mean, when my mom was dying and I was going through all that shit with my family and my dad died and all these different things that were happening, you know, like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, you know, the stand-up thing is the thing that really kind of saved me, because I would go on that stage and I'd see all these smiling faces and I'd get my laughs and it was just like, you know, I could breathe.
Right.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah. That's the therapy. When you're doing what you love and you're seeing it impact people in that way. And you have that's the thing. You said you're going to do shows now, like, and I'm hearing your self-deprecating self talking about, you know, but like the impact you made on people like us and the fans from that era, from that more innocent time, from the MTV days, from those movies, like those are cult classic movies that you're in that people still love and want to see now. I mean, look at this podcast that we're doing. It's, you know, the 90s. Like we recognize people's sort of, you know, desire to look back on that era and that period of time and connect with the people that, you know, influenced us so much. So I just think it's amazing that you're doing it and that you're doing what you love. And like, you know, you've got a lot of it looks like you've got a lot of irons in the fire right now, like a lot going on.
Yeah. I mean, our time on this earth is limited, as you know. People are getting cancer and, you know, this, you know, this fucking people die and get shot. It's just like, so like, you know, when people die around you, you start to realize like, oh shit, at some point I'm going to die. Like, fuck, I got to like figure, I got to work. I got to, you know, do this. So like, you know, every day, you know, it sounds corny, but every day we're lucky to get up and, you know, you try to look at life half full and, you know, and not compare yourself. So, you know, with the internet now, you know, you can create anything you want. So starting when I did Pauly Shore is Dead is when I started to kind of create my own stuff. And yeah, like you said, I have a lot of irons. I have a lot of irons in the fire. I'm doing a lot of different things because I enjoy it. And, you know, I have my show Jam in the Van, which is a really cool show. And it took me a while with those guys to figure out what the fuck this thing is.
Yeah. You know, tell us about it. Tell our listeners about it. Cool. Tell us a little bit about how it started for you.
Well, it's Jam in the Van is like an underground, really hip, cool kind of site. And it's very music driven. So if you watch the site, there's all these cool musicians that you and I don't fucking know, because I mean, at least for me, I'm older. I don't know what's going on with the younger musicians, but they all have big followings and they're all really good musicians. So if you go on their website, just your YouTube, you can see all these great musicians. And it's this whole, like, it's not DJs, it's like real musicians. And they're just really good. So that's their basis music. And then they started doing comedy. So you got Jeff Ross over there, Bill Burr, Eliza Schlesinger. Everyone's kind of doing stand-up over there. So me and the owner, Jake, we became friends on Instagram, I don't know, probably 2 years ago. And I just really liked their style. And so I started doing a podcast that was mostly where I was interviewing musicians. And I didn't like that because musicians don't talk. You know what I mean? They just kind of like, yeah, cool. Okay, cool. You know what I mean? So that was like pulling teeth. And I'm like, it was good, but it wasn't it. And then we came up with the structure, which is a comic, an influencer, and a musician. So it's a talk show. It's not a podcast. So every episode is got a comedian next to me from the store. We do shtick. And then we bring on an influencer who's got like 10 million followers on TikTok or you know, IG or YouTube or whatever. And so we interview them. And then we bring on the musician at the end and interview them for 5 minutes. And then at the end, the band plays kind of like a Jimmy Kimmel at the end, you know? And that's kind of the structure. So now we're happy. We got the structure. We kind of know what the show is. It's called Jam in the Van Show, hosted by Pauly Shore. We got comedians, influencers, musicians. Every show's about 20 minutes. We have a whole bunch in the can and we're going to try to license it to maybe an MTV or, you know, Tubi or something like that as a talk show. And it's fun. At the end of the day, it's fun. It's not like, it doesn't feel like work. And it's funny. You know, I'm watching these clips, the way they edit them and the way they put them together. The clips are really funny.
You know, I love about you that, you know, so many people know you from some very big commercial, successful movies, but your comedy is edgy. You have an edge about you. I mean, almost in the way that Bob Saget, and you were never like squeaky clean like Bob Saget, but you would go see Bob Saget on stage and you were like, holy shit. This is not the guy that I know. And Pauly, you know, I'm sure with your podcast, like I saw you interviewing two girls from OnlyFans. And I only recently learned what that was. But, you know, and then I watched part of your comedy in Oregon. And I'm like, you go there, man. You have like a real edge to you that most people probably wouldn't know unless they're a fan of your comedy. But from your movies, your comedy goes much deeper.
Yeah, I definitely go there. My style has always been kind of like go to the edge, but don't go over the edge. I don't think I go over the edge, but I definitely go to the edge. I definitely push the edge. But that's kind of who I am. I was raised around Richard Pryor, Robin Williams, Sam Kennison. Like I have a potty mouth. You know what I mean? I have my parents divorced when I was three. I had no parental supervision. You know, I'm not, you know, Sandler, you know what I mean? I didn't grow up with support from my family. My family was like this, you know what I mean? I was always like pushed out.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like $1 million.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're talking about like being bounced around from comic to comic. You were sort of, you know, watching them, almost raising yourself in that way because your parents were so in it, right? They were just in the, and that was a nightlife scene, right? That was just a full on. So as a kid, you're in the clubs at night. At what point did you start to put together like your own set? And did you sit down and kind of like write and say, okay, this is like from everything I've done and what I've seen, I want to get on stage and do a set? Or did you just sort of boldly say, screw it, I'm going up and I'm going to try something?
Yeah, what was it like when you first went up? What was that like?
Yeah.
Well, let me answer. The first part is when I decided to do it. It's kind of like bungee jumping. You just kind of fucking say, fuck it, I'm just going to do it. It was at the beginning of 12th grade. at Beverly Hills High School. The teacher passed back the SAT paper. The SAT paper is a test where you sign up to go to college, if you remember.
Yeah.
And that's when I threw the SAT paper away and I said, okay, now I'm going to start doing my stand-up. So at the beginning of 12th grade, I said to myself, hey, if I can do stand-up comedy for a year, then when all my friends go to college a year or two later, then at least I have, you know, my stand-up behind me. So I just took it serious at the beginning of 12th grade. And that's, you know, and I stayed away from the Comedy Store when I first started. So for about 2 years, I worked the Laugh Factory. I worked the LA Cabaret. I went to New York.
Wait, your first stand-up sets were not at the Comedy Store?
No. For 2 years.
Wow.
That's so respectable.
Yeah.
But surprising.
But even, you know, that's the name of my play. So my one-man show is, it's called Stick with the Dancing. Because after I've been performing at other clubs around town, it was finally time for me to open or showcase for my mom at the store. And I did the jokes. And then I ended with a pop locking. I was a pretty good pop locker. And I said, how did I do? She said, stick with the dancing.
Stop. No. Yeah.
And that's when the tension built between my mom and I. Yeah.
Did she ever... I know you said she respected once you started getting the big movies, but did she ever watch one of your sets and say you nailed it?
No. She wasn't having that because I wasn't ready. Even when I made it and I was known, I still wasn't ready. Like she made me a paid regular and she was still like, you're still not ready. I'm like, Mom, there's people here to see me. It doesn't fucking matter. You don't got it. So she was always... You know,
but she was honest.
Yeah.
Right. Like a lot of parents are like,
right. Hey. It takes you years to develop stand up.
Yeah.
If she saw me now, she'd be like, yeah, you're on it. Cause I'm a lot better than I am now. I kind of could figure it out on stage. But at the time I was kind of a persona. It was cute, but it was still like, you know, I think my stand up got better once my bigger movies stopped. You know, because I kind of spit myself out into a society of this kind of this underdog. And then immediately I felt more connected with people. You know what I mean?
But that surfer dude Weasel character, where did that come from?
Weasel, bro.
Buddy. I mean, we all remember. Weasel,
bro.
Where'd you get that?
I bought it from a store for $3.46.
From Sean Penn?
Yeah. No, I don't know. It kind of developed on MTV and it kind of happened by accident. It wasn't anything planned. It started with me pausing between my words, you know, and when I was hosting the videos on MTV, I would say like, yo, check out this video. It's going to be major.
Right. That was it.
And I did that. And then from there, just like my cadence started to develop. It's kind of like developing anything like similar to my Jam in the Van show. You know what I mean? You just keep developing. You figure out what the fuck it is. Even the Richard Simmons thing, which I'm getting ready to work on some stuff with that. Like I'm learning his cadence and learning his kind of, you know, his, I don't know how he is. So, you know, it's developing in trial and error. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that and how that came to be. This because this has become like sort of an internet sensation, right? People are wanting you to play Richard in a biopic, yes?
Yeah, but I heard Ben Stiller's trying to take my fucking role again. So
no, Ben should direct it.
He should direct it. That'd be
seriously.
Sick. That would be sick. For sure. Well, I got a deal with the company at Warner Brothers, so we're gonna go out and shop it. So
people are already giving you an Academy Award for this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And millions of people saying, Academy Award.
How did this come to be? Did you know Richard before? It's just purely your, you know, a side-by-side shot of young Richard and you. And
well, if you go on my YouTube channel or my Instagram, you can see videos called Sweating with the Wheeze.
Okay.
So I did these videos because people are like, you know, it started on stage as a stand-up where I'm like, you know, blah, 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 Richard Simmons. And then people started laughing and I started acting like Richard on stage. And then I did these videos, Sweat with the Wheeze. And those went, I don't want to say viral, but people really enjoyed them. And then from there, someone did a meme saying, Pauly Shore should play Richard Simmons in a biopic. Mm-hmm. And that started. And then from there, I put that up and I said, hey, me and Richard are talking. This is happening, da-da-da-da-da. And then immediately everyone's like, fuck, Pauly Shore's talking to Richard Simmons when I never talked to the guy. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like me goofing off. And then all of a sudden it took off. And then I got calls from, you know, these production companies that are like, let's do this. And now, you know, we're going to go and try to shop it. So,
I mean, that would be a great role. I don't know that much. Does he have an interesting life? Is it like film worthy?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I want it to be like, you know, my feeling is like that whole, I think it's like, you know, the Bohemian Rhapsody meets Barbie or something. You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of like that, you know, Richard, hey, hi, right, everybody. Hi. Oh my God. Look at those beautiful, healthy looking audience.
Oh my God.
Am I so behind? Because wasn't there a whole thing a couple of years ago where he's been off the grid and no one knows where he is? Is that still, has he been found? Do people know where he is?
Richard,
like, wasn't there
Richard,
a whole thing?
Richard, if you're watching us, we're going to find you, Richard.
What do you mean he's missing?
Wait, am I crazy? This is true, right? This is something, because I listened to Howard Stern and I remember Howard Stern talking about it, that because Richard used to come on regularly on the Howard Stern show years and years ago. And there's just been a, you know, he kind of went off the grid. He would still do appearances for a long time. And now he's kind of, I mean, obviously he's older and maybe he just wants to be off the grid. Like, I don't blame him.
You can't be off the grid in 2023. I mean, someone's got to be able to find you. Unless you're Joe Torres.
He lives down the street. He's just in a gated house and he wants to be left alone. That's kind of
right. Right. Yeah. So it was that simple.
Richard, we're not going to leave you alone. We're coming after you, Richard. We love you. Come out wherever you are.
You already sound like him there. So yeah, that works.
This is going to happen. I feel it.
Yeah.
Pauly, I saw recently Jeff Ross did a preview of his one-man show. Mm. My friend Daniel Kellison, who I think you're also friendly with, took me. It was at the Improv on Melrose, and it was an hour and 45 minutes. Wow. I wasn't expecting it, dude, but honestly, I laughed my ass off, and I freaking cried when he talked about his parents putting his dog down, all these things. It was a journey.
Wow.
That was so intense, and it reminded me the power of one man or one performer and a microphone and an audience, and that's it. And he took us through his entire life. Mm. And I'm so excited to see what you've put together and where are you going to be performing it? Are you workshopping it, or where can we see it?
Well, I've been doing it. I heard great things about Jeff's show. And, you know, Jeff's has seen my show. He enjoyed my show. He saw it. I was in the New York Comedy Film Festival with it last year. But if you just go on my website, you know, my website, PaulyShore.com, under tour dates, and, you know, you'll find it. But it's called Stick With The Dancing. It's stories of my childhood. And it takes place. It's all my childhood up until I made it. So then, you know, and then it kind of ends. You know what I mean? So it's
everything. Oh, so it's none of the glory days. It's just childhood.
Correct. Yeah. And right now I'll be at Flappers on December 11th. And then I have some, and then that'll be it. And then next year I have some more dates with it. I'll be at the Comedy Store on January 31st. And I just did Joe Rogan's Club a couple weeks ago with it. So I'm touring it, you know what I mean? And it's like any other show, you know, eventually you want to get it to a Netflix or an Amazon or a Hulu or a, you know, HBO or something like some kind
is
of
the goal. The goal is not to get into theaters and possibly bring it to Broadway, you know, like 700 Sundays, the Billy Crystal thing.
That would be great because that's where I'd like to film it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So if I can get it to, you know, to off Broadway or something like that. But I'm really looking for, you know, like a Live Nation or someone like that. I know Australia is talking about bringing me out to Australia with it. So people are talking about it, and, you know, it's, It's like I said earlier, like the Jam in the Van or the MTV stuff. You just want to make it better and better. And then God and the timing and the, you know, the God, the entertainment gods will kind of come to you when the right time is. And then, you know, you film it and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, life is just about developing things, getting it better. And same Jeff's as well. Jeff's probably always changes and gets better. So it's kind of at a, it's at a really good place. The difference between mine and Jeff, did Jeff have like backgrounds? Like, did he have,
he had a piano player. He had a musician there that
he had video. He had no videos and behind him.
Nope. Just one guy talking. Yeah. That was
so it. Mine is like Mike Tyson's Undisputed Truth.
I never saw that.
Oh, it's so good. It's Spike Lee directed it.
Oh my gosh.
It's really good. It's on HBO. It's amazing. That's the vibe of mine. So I'm speaking and then there's things and images and videos playing behind me.
So you have a whole visual element as well.
And if you just go online, you could see the trailer. If you just Google Pauly Shore, stick with the dancing trailer, it's out there everywhere. So there's a trailer and blah, blah, blah.
Do you go deep into this, your relationship with your mom?
Absolutely.
Like, is that really where you go with it?
Yes.
So it's got to be a...
Well, it's all that stuff you guys started talking to me about when you first started talking to me, whenever we first started talking, you know? So, and it's also got a lot of Sam Kennison in it, It's got my ex-girlfriend in it, who I don't want to say what happened with that because I want to save it for the show. There's a lot of stuff on that. But it's just like, you know, it's all that stuff that you guys are, you know, are asking me about.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, because you said that the show takes you up until you sort of hit it big and it's sort of the first chapter of your life, so to speak, right? Before your mom died, and I know you said your relationship changed when you got successful and you speak a similar language at that point. Did you find, this is not meant to be heavy in any way, but did you find some healing with her over the years as you both got older? Did she sort of soften a bit in her later years of, you know, sort of, because I don't know. I think as a parent, she was in it, right? And but you were a kid and you were looking for a parental guidance. And I feel like, you know, it didn't seem like she was capable of giving it back then. And were you able to sort of reconcile that relationship a little bit?
Yeah. No, I took care of my mom her last years. You know, she had Parkinson's.
So, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. If you know anything about that, it's a fucking nightmare. So that was really challenging. Just, you know, and she didn't understand it. And then the dementia.
The physical toll it takes on the body. And then, and dementia. Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, that was hard, but yeah, we totally hit it off and she was in love with me and I was in love with her. And that's, you know, and that's, it's hard for me to be at the store really, because if you look at the store, you know, the way she left it is the way it is. So every time I'm at the store, it's like, it's not like I'm at a normal comedy club, you know, at a normal comedy club, it's like my fans and it's silly and it's wacky. And I walk into the store, it's emotional for me and it's difficult. And I think that for my brothers as well, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, it's your mom, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, we did reconcile and, you know, we've been very close for many years.
It's so beautiful hearing you say, she was so in love with me and I was so in love with her. Like, that's a really beautiful thing. And, you know, to, I don't know, but you both got older and wiser, and then life, like you said, life happens and really big hard things happen, and everyone's in it together in that way, and you just, you know, so anyway, yeah. That's really beautiful.
Yeah, and the thing with, you know, me doing the stand-up, you know, she was probably going through an emotional like thing as well, like, oh my god, like my poor son is gonna have to deal with all this failure and the drugs and the this and that. I don't want him to go through that, but yet I do want him to go through that because that's who he is. And so she was probably also, you know, going through like a tug of war in her mind about you know, like, should he do it? Should he not do it? You know?
Right. And maybe her discouraging you was to protect you.
Right.
In some way.
Yeah. Yes, doctor. I think you're right.
Yes. We've done our job.
Yeah.
I have a podcast PhD, armchair expert.
But yeah, it was, you know, it was, you know, like I said early on, you know, I had a gun to my head to make it quick so I can get accepted by her and say, look, mom, I'm really serious about this. And it blew her away because I started starring in these movies and I became this thing. And she was very proud, obviously. And the MTV thing was really fun because I used to film, you know, I used to film my show at the house and I'd raid my mom's closet and I'd put her scarves on my head and put her clothes on and put my clothes on. And it was just like, and she thought that was really fun. Yeah.
Wait, you did that from the house? You, the whole show?
No, I did it wherever I wanted to do
it. Oh, wherever you wanted to go. Exactly. Yeah, so that was that, right.
Yeah, it was totally.
Yeah, you took it on the road. Exactly.
Sometimes if it was raining, I'd be like, yo, bros, we're just going to stay in and like, we're going to hang out here and watch videos and walk around my house. And it would be like, that would be the episode, you know? So it was always like wherever we wanted, you know?
And how, we didn't even get into that because we talked about the early stand-up and when you started, but like, did MTV come knocking very soon after, or were you, did they come to you or did you go to them?
Well,
when you landed on MTV?
They saw me at the Comedy Store. They brought me to Spring Break. That went really bad. That I tanked on my first Spring Break.
Really?
I was nervous. There was hundreds of thousands of kids. I wasn't comfortable. They pretty much sent me home and then I started writing my own jokes, started developing my own style. And then I did a show called Comic Strip Live, which was on Fox. That went really well. We sent that tape to MTV. MTV then said, oh fuck, like he's come a long way. And then they gave us, to host a show called Five Funny Guys. And once I did that, then I was kind of like back in with them. And then I started guest VJing late night. And then it just slowly kind of happened. And then my cadence and my style kind of developed. And then I got my show. And then, you know, and then from there, it just kind of took off, like kind of like a wildfire, you know, like, or nowadays it's called going viral. So yeah. So it kind of went viral all over, you know, no one understood, nor did I understand why it was working, you know?
Well, the interesting thing too is that seemingly to us, the people who were just when you just started to you know, appear everywhere, you put a lot of freaking work into what you developed. Like from what I'm hearing, like you said, you took acting class, you were auditioning, you were doing episodes of shows. When Spring Break tanked, you went back and got down to writing and figuring out what your vibe was, and like, this was not like a fluke. I mean, you put, like, you were not like an overnight, you were in a sense, but you had put a lot of, you'd laid a lot of the groundwork.
Yeah, I did. But still, that being said, I still didn't know what I was doing once I was on the air, because you're literally, you're it's not scripted.
Right.
You just have one producer, one cameraman, one sound guy, and that's it. And it was all up to me to like go up to someone on the street and go, yo, you guys, come here, check this out. Look at this guy. And I'd go up to the guy, yo, bro, da, 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 da. And I didn't know what the fuck was going to happen. You know what I mean? Sometimes I would do things like, we'd be on the beach and I'd see these like kind of jock guys down there, and off camera, I'd go up to them and I would say, hey, listen, I'm going to go up to you and start touching your head and start fucking with you. Like, act like you're going to beat the shit out of me. And then don't laugh, no matter what. Don't fucking laugh. Right? So then I'd be like, and they'd be like, all right, action. I'm like, yo, guys, da da da. Look at these jarheads. They're stupid. Da 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 da. Yo, bros, da 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 da. And they're like, get away from me, you little fucker. Da da da. And that reaction would be like, oh my God, he's going to get killed. Play real. Yeah.
Dude, honestly, that's like pre Johnny Knoxville or Sasha Cohen. You know, you were fearless. I mean, when you look back at your 20-something-year-old self, do you have respect for the work that you did?
I just loved it. Yeah, I just loved it. You know what I mean? I loved, and I still do. I like it now just as much now as I did back then, you know? So It's in me, you know, it's just, it's in me. So I don't know. I mean, I love, you know, I love it. Yeah.
How about the fact that it, going back to what you said really early on, when we first started talking, that you said it was a different time. It was an innocent time. Like, yes. Can you imagine MTV today? They have to be so careful, and it's so manufactured. It was, you could not do a show like that today in that the way you did it.
Well, that's why we have the internet. So you can
exactly,
do it on the internet. Yeah.
Exactly. That's why, you know,
podcasts and Joe Rogan and Theo Vaughn and all these places. And that's where business is going, where you guys are doing and you just kind of have to change with the times. You know, these are the times, so you have to embrace it and not be pissed off about it.
Yeah, but if you went and poked a kid now on the beach, they'd call the police. Correct. Like, you're in my personal space.
Correct.
You know, it is a different time, and everyone's so freaking sensitive.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's in treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Comedy in the 70s and 80s, where there were a few greats, but it was a niche thing. And then all of a sudden, I don't know when it happened, comedy is the biggest thing in the world. Even right now. I mean, these guys, Sebastian, Nate Bargatze, I mean, they're like rock stars. When did that, was it Seinfeld, or when did comedy become the biggest form of entertainment in the world?
I think with the podcasting, and I think with the Netflix, and right. I think with just the world, people want, I don't want to say healing sounds kind of corny, but I think like people want to be able to laugh. And I think that, you know, social media has a lot to do with it. Back in the day, if you were doing a club, like I would do a club, say like in Houston, and before I fly in, you know, half the tickets are sold for the weekend. And then I would go on one radio station, you know, in the morning station, one radio station, and you go on, and then all the tickets would sell out. Now it's just Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
You just post it.
Yeah. So people are consuming comedy on all over, everywhere. So I think, you know, with, like I said, podcasting and Netflix and yeah, but you're right, you know, because when I was growing up, there was three or four people that sold out arenas and that was it.
Right.
And now it's like everyone sells out arenas.
Who are your favorite? Who do you enjoy the most nowadays?
Well, I love Sebastian. You mentioned Sebastian. I think he's really funny. I saw Dice at the Wiltern like 2 weeks ago. He was great.
Oh my God. Dice is touring right now? Are you still doing it?
He's great. You should get him on this for sure.
I mean, that would be a dream.
I'll get you guys on it. I'll get him. I'll connect you guys with Dice. He's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. He's killing it. It was a great set. Who else do I like? I like Joe Rogan. I think Joe's doing great out at his club. Tony Hinchcliffe is really funny. You know, he's out there in Austin. You know, a lot of guys I like, Montgomery out there. You got Hans Kim, Bobby Lee's funny.
Bobby's the greatest.
So, you know, Andrew Santino's funny. All those guys, you know.
He's really funny.
Where do you live? Are you in Austin?
I can't tell you that.
He's on the run from the feds.
I'm in Argentina, bro.
Our guests don't even know who we just interviewed. This is all going to be muffled out.
Just in case, my son is a freshman at UT Austin. So we're there several times a year. And he's loving it. I love the city. I've been there many times. But Joe Rogan has a club there, right? A comedy club?
Yeah. Yeah. It's called the Comedy Mothership.
That's great.
It's great.
All right. I got to get there.
Yeah. So I'm in Vegas and in LA and in Austin. I kind of bop around.
This was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing so many great stories. I can't believe you remembered our 90s crossover.
Yeah, I remember. When I saw your face, I remember you.
The Biodome days.
Yeah, it's amazing that film, you know, held up, you know?
It's got a following and it's on a lot. I notice that it's on TV a lot when I'm flipping through.
And also the son-in-law is being, I don't know if it's on TikTok because it's a Thanksgiving thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've seen a bunch of stuff. And yeah, you were so funny in all those movies.
Well, let's see Richard Simmons. Let's see this. Yes. This next wave. We also have Guest House on Netflix. I don't know if you saw that. That's my movie. It's really funny. It was with Lionsgate. And that's out on Netflix. And you got what else do I have? I don't know. My YouTube page has got a lot of my stuff. And then also The Jam in the Van, which is out right now. And then I also have a series called Hooray for Pollywood, which is like a scripted kind of like a show on my YouTube page, you know, which is fun as well. So
wait, it's scripted and you produce it yourself?
Yeah. It's kind of like,
I gotta check that out.
It's kind of like Curb meets Pauly Shore is Dead.
Oh my God. I gotta see that.
You have so much going on. We've got our work to do. We gotta check out all of it. So good to see you, love.
All right, guys. Bye.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Pauly. Thank you so much.
Bye.
I mean, another great one. I don't know what to say.
I know. I like I said, I met him a little bit, but I really always saw him as the character he was, like this outrageous,
right?
You know, larger than life. You know, it's my own thing where you don't know a person that well, and you're like, oh, he's like a wild man, and. I knew his whole history of the Comedy Store. I just didn't realize how intense the relationship with his mother was and, you know, and how open he is about sharing it, you know, and like nothing, you know how hard it is in being a parent, being a child, but we all have that, you know, wanting to please our parents in some way, right? Our kids have it. We had it.
I know, but this was next level because, right?
Next level.
You encourage your kids. I know Mitzi's approval is the fire that drove him.
Right. But
it was interesting when he said, I think she didn't accept my comedy because she didn't want me in this world.
Yeah.
She knew what it could lead to. Like, that's just a very interesting dynamic. And definitely his one man show has to be fascinating.
Yeah.
And I love that it's only up until he got success.
I know, because that is probably a whole other show. There could be a whole show for that. But that's he's a really, really interesting guy. And, you know, obviously still super funny and let off with the, you know, his crazy stories, but like very real and solid and has a lot to say. So,
so honest. And you know what? Really he's great. So loved. Like, I feel like people, you know, I know when he made Pauly Shore is Dead, he was probably in a dark period.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where like sometimes the business spits you out for a minute. Then you come back around.
Yeah.
And you realize, I mean, he is loved as a performer, as a comedian, as a person. He's so loved. And I feel like he knows that now. And he seems like he's in a very good place.
Yeah. I think that's something that I feel like, you know, we don't talk to too many of our guests about, and not all of them have had that experience, but he was so, so big. And then the way he said, it's like, he didn't know he didn't have time to figure out to make decisions or the right team leading him. And he felt like he went off the grid, and that feeling of loss and this like, oh, I've just been shunned by the industry that made me. They all loved me, you know, a year ago. And
everyone goes through it. But
high to the low, low, you know, a lot of us sort of have moments of a different.
I mean, look at John Travolta, you know, someone like that. I mean, yeah, there are extremes. I feel like everybody rises up, they fall back down, they come back around, and the work that you did it somehow ends up getting appreciated.
Yeah. And you if you love it, like he said, it's in his DNA.
Right. You got it.
You're not leaving it. You're going to find a way to create and be creative and do what you love. So really great. All right, everybody. Well, that's it for today. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to subscribe and give us 5 stars.
And please follow us on Instagram at HeyDudeTheNineties Called. See you next time.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.